Welcome back. Pull your chair back up to the table as we continue in Revelation chapter 12. Brent, let's take a look there at verse 17.
Yeah.
Then the dragon became furious with the woman. He's always frustrated, isn't he?
Wouldn't you be?
You know, you mentioned in the front half that he has no place of his own. And I'm still fascinated by that. That's starting to sink in a little bit with me. And I don't know maybe whether one can say this or not. So he just, it almost appears to me he's just the opportunist then. He's just roaming around, just mm-hmm. looking for
always wanting to
cracks.
Accuse.
Yeah, there you go. Well, yeah, his modus operandi is always the same.
Lie.
Accuse.
Yeah. Slander.
Yeah. Heap and burden.
Now, you'll notice how that works then with sinners. Seriously.
There's plenty of opportunity.
My point is this. Is that, have you noticed how people operate, especially yourself? I know with my life. I do that all the time. Slander. Lie. Deceive. Why? To justify ourselves.
That's what I was going to get at.
Always to justify ourselves.
Always make an excuse.
Yeah.
For why Scott, in the end, is okay.
That's right. I'll lie, cheat, whatever, to justify myself and my position of what I think is so great in this world. This is how sinners operate. And one of the great things that God does with sinners like you and me and everybody else who does this 24/7 is God shines the light on this and says, you're a sinner and you deserve to die. You know, read Psalm 51. And you'll notice that Psalm 51, David prayed that when? Yeah. After he was confronted with his sin of adultery and murder and you name it, coveting, yep. the whole ball of wax, stealing, idolatry. And after he was forgiven, shown that he was a sinner by Nathan. You're the man. I've sinned against the Lord. The Lord has put away your sin. And then comes Psalm 51. And that's a gracious God who would do such a thing to sinners, to show them the truth that, first of all, they're sinners, puts them to death through his word of law, and then rescues them to the word of the gospel, salvation, raising you from the dead through Jesus Christ who died for you. What a wonderful Lord we have that he would do that. And see, that's the essence of church. That's the essence of preaching. That's the essence of Bible study. Everything revolves around that. That's a whole nother study, but don't get me going. We're in Revelation 13.
Oh, that's right. Well, 12.
We're getting to 13. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Jumping
already.
Ahead, folks.
12, yeah, that's right.
But we have the frustrated dragon.
Yeah, that's
then.
Right. He's frustrated.
Okay. And so he goes off to make war on the rest of her offspring, the women's offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus.
Yeah.
So watch out. Woe to you, earth, for he's been cast down to you.
Yeah.
And this is just that same language of him prowling. He's on the prowl, looking to devour you.
Yeah, and what's interesting here is that he goes after those who obey God's commandments and hold to Jesus' testimony. You know, those are Christians who truly are at odds then with the devil. Because Christians serve and obey the Lamb, Jesus Christ, not the dragon, and not his beasties, which we're going to hear about in Revelation 13.
They walk in the light of God's truth, of his word, which drives out the darkness of the satanic lies.
Yeah.
And deceit.
And in the witness of Christians, and that happens in many ways, in some cases in this world it's even unto death. But in their witness, they are the true followers of the Lamb who was slain. Now, Christians, and I want to say one other thing about this, Christians keep God's commandments by walking as Jesus walked. Remember what John says, same writer of the book of Revelation. This is 1 John 2:6, where he says, whoever claims to live in him must walk as Jesus did. And Revelation 14:4 says, these are those who did not defile themselves. They follow the Lamb wherever he goes. So that's very sharp language, but very good language to describe John's point here.
Yep.
Now, for reinforcements in his war against the church, the dragon then goes to the edge of the sea. The sea, his native element. He waits there, dare I say it, in this, I'm going to do it. He waits there. The dragon waits there for his CEO to emerge, his chief executive officer. Now, I don't use that language to besmirch or diminish people who are in business. It's just to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, don't misunderstand me. And he takes his stand then on the shore of the sea. His conqueror, as we will soon see, Where will he take his stand? He will take his stand on the solid rock of Mount Zion, which we'll hear about later. That's Revelation 14. But I'm going to say it anyway. Revelation 14 says, "Then I looked, and there before me was the Lamb standing on Mount Zion." So here, at the end of chapter 12 and the beginning of chapter 13, you have the first, well, you have the dragon who stands on the shore of the sea. But Jesus, when he comes again, when we see this picture of Jesus the conqueror, he takes his stand on Mount Zion. So this is fun stuff. So now, are you ready to go into chapter 13? I've been waiting.
Oh, it's a delicious chapter.
Well, so I'll tell you, you know what's interesting too, Scott, is Revelation 13, even if people don't study the Bible, even if you're not even a Christian, most people, generally speaking, know something about Revelation 13, which we'll get into later. It's the number of the beast, 666. You know, it's just the rage. Everybody knows that.
Sure, if you watched a movie or whatever, yeah. It pops up all over the place.
Oh, yeah, the gothic people, you know, the people are all into goth. They know about this, you know, the heavy metal, the punk rock, you name it. They all know 666. You know, when I was growing up, there were those Damien movies, you know, the Omen movies, where the Antichrist came into the world, you know, and 666. So everybody knows about this chapter. Good grief. But do they really understand it?
Now you're starting to date yourself.
I'm not that old yet. Well, what I want to do here as we get it, before we read Revelation 13, I want to make some introductory remarks.
Go for it.
Well, first of all, let's remember that Satan is a creature. But he's not the creator. And he's a fallen angel. And angels are creatures. All right, but he's not the creator. And so Satan is a perverse, rebellious creature. So he cannot create anything or do any new things like God can. Everything that Satan does is a distortion. What he does is a twisted copy or a twisted imitation of the real thing. And behind all of Satan's glamour and behind all of Satan's glitz is not the truth, but simply the parody of the truth. The kingdom of Satan is like a Hollywood film set. You ever been to Hollywood?
Nope.
Well, you ought to check out those film sets, especially the old ones they used, and I'm going to date myself again, the old westerns like Bonanza or Gunsmoke, you know? Even the sets to this day, they're made up of what looks like magnificent buildings, but they all have false fronts.
All a facade.
Exactly. And behind the facade is emptiness. There's nothing there. So for his fight against the church, the red dragon now employs two beasts. And most commentators agree, and I agree with them, most commentators agree that the beast from the sea represents the political and economic order of Rome that is so corrupt that it can be only described as satanic. Now, is that the only meaning? No. I would contend that the first beast that comes out of the sea is the political and economic orders of all ages that can also be described as satanic when they are corrupt and rotten to the core and try to imitate God. You know exactly where I'm going with that one.
Absolutely. So this isn't stuck in time in a certain era. This applies throughout the entire New Testament era.
Exactly, because remember, Paul, when he describes the man of sin in 2 Thessalonians 2, or the Antichrist, he says that he lasts until the end of time, until Christ comes and destroys him with his mouth. But it's already at work even in Paul's day. Mm-hmm. So you have this entire thing of the satanic working, both in the world and in the church. It lasts until, well, when Christ came, until he will destroy it all on the last day. So now in John's day, let's put it this way. The beast from the sea is personified in Rome by the emperor, in the provinces by the proconsuls and the local governors and the magistrates, because they were all arms or fingers, extensions of the emperor in Rome. Now the beast from the earth. So I've talked about the beast from the sea.
Yep.
Just preliminarily, if you will. Now the beast from the earth, most commentators, and I agree with them, that the beast from the earth is the religious leaders. I said religious leaders. That can be both pagan and even Christian. And on John's day, it would be the priests and the priestesses in the imperial cult, that is to say, the imperial emperor worship.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And their agents and their officials that took place in the temples. For instance, many temples in John's day, we've discussed this before, that were dedicated to Artemis, to Zeus, Apollo, or other false deities. Now, together, here's my final remarks on some introductory points here. Together, these three, that is to say, the dragon and the two beasts, they form an unholy trinity, small t. I repeat, an unholy trinity, small t, because they parody in their persons and their work, the Holy Trinity, capital H, capital T. All right, so much for introductory remarks. What do you want to say now?
Well, I wanted to piggyback on that a little bit, because you talked a lot about the parody and the mimicking. And so you have the Holy Trinity who says it is good. And then you have the unholy Trinity who says, well, here's something better.
Yeah.
And I think there's an apt description of the deceit that is constantly, and it's really a power. It's a power play with this deceit.
And it's exactly what happened in Genesis 3.
It's part of creation trying to be the creator.
Yeah. And it's, what you mentioned too, Satan, one of Satan's lies there is, did God really say, and part of the deceit here is God's holding out on you.
Yeah.
You know, you can know good and evil. As if you're God, like Zeus himself on Mount Olympus, and you can decide that is good, that is. And now another thing about this good and evil, and I think this is missed in a lot of the commentators and the understanding of the Genesis 3 text. You shall know good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
It means you'll know absolutely everything. You will know absolutely everything. You know, because in this sinful world, people ask when bad things happen, why did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
That didn't make sense. And this, oh, you'll be like God. You'll be able, you'll know more than the inner recesses of God's own mind.
You'll be the answer man.
Exactly.
Everybody will come to you.
Yeah, you don't need God. See, you yourself will be God.
You will rule and reign.
And that's the whole point.
And not just over yourself, but over others.
Yeah. So, and then we're, and this is being described here in Revelation 13.
Everybody loves to be in the driver's seat.
Yeah, that's right.
By the way, for those of you listening, Brent controls the keyboard here, so he's in the driver's seat as we record.
Hey, move your hand.
Sorry. Hey.
Get out of the way.
Well, do we
yeah,
wait?
Let's do
do
it.
We wade in just a little bit?
Yeah, let's
bit
do it.
Here?
Let's dip our toes in it.
So, chapter 13, and I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns, and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's, and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed. And the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast, and they worshipped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like he's in charge here, in total control.
Yeah. Well, and the whole earth is marveling and following the beast.
Yeah, yeah.
Pied Piper's plan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this is, again, John is telling us the truth. Watch out. Watch out. Here are your true enemies. He's unmasking them. And we're about at the end here. And let me just say one thing about this. The first beast characteristically rises out of the sea. And the sea here in the book of Revelation is the abyss. It's the bottomless pit. Remember in Revelation 11:7, that's what it was called. It symbolizes chaos. It symbolizes evil. It is the source. It is the natural habitat of the beast. And let's have some more fun with this the next time we talk, because this is really going
to be. We invite you to come back and join us.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.